On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. All right, everybody, I'm here with Johnny Larson today, formerly of the St. Louis Cardinals organization and currently down at FAU. Johnny, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate your time. Tell the listeners about yourself, if you would.
All right, so, well, first of all, thank you for having me. I truly appreciate it. So right now, I'm serving as the Assistant Strength and Conditioning Coordinator for Olympic Sports at Florida Atlantic University. Primarily, I work with FAU's baseball program. And then supplement to that, I work with volleyball, women's soccer, and up until this point, I've been working with FAU softball as well.
And so tell me about your journey prior to getting to FAU, because I want to get into kind of comparing and contrasting pro ball and college ball.
Okay.
Kind of give a little bit of a background about yourself before we get too deep into the details.
Okay. So I was an undergrad student at Hofstra University in Long Island, New York. Where I was initially a political science major, studying foreign relations, policy. I was also serving as a student manager for Hofstra University softball program. And I was competing in powerlifting and doing the whole bodybuilding thing, what I thought was, you know, functional training at the time. And a lot of the softball players pretty much said, you know, hey, you have this passion, this overwhelming passion for training, nutrition, the way you eat, how meticulous your lifestyle is based on fitness and things of that sort. Why didn't you study exercise science? I said, I didn't know there was such a thing that you could study in college. I had, you know, previously attended a military academy for 6 years. So it was pretty set in stone that it was either going to be the military or law enforcement, going into law of some sort. So she introduced me to the exercise science staff and they brought me into the program and said I had enough prerequisites to kind of finish up a 4-year major in a year and a half for 3 or 4 semesters. So I took them on and I served as the student manager again for another year with Hofstra softball while finishing exercise science. And my time with Hofstra softball finished and the assistant coach got me linked up with one of the Olympic strength coaches at West Point, Army West Point, for my first internship. And it was Tana Burge, who is now Texas A&M, who brought me in. And Burge and Kyle Farrell were both of the Olympic strength coaches that kind of took me in and, you know, showed me the ropes as an intern and, you know, cleaning the benches and making sure that the numbers on the dumbbells and the plates were facing upright. And, you know, every other day, hey, John, we want you to write us a 3 to 4 week program for women's soccer in the off season. Write it up, bring it in tomorrow morning. We want you to defend it type of thing. Hey, John, the freshmen are track and field athletes need to learn how to snatch. Take them down to those platforms and get them going. So they were my first mentors, so to speak, in the field. And after the better part of a year, working under Kyle Farrell, Tana Burge, and the head strength coach there, Scott Swanson, I was given an opportunity to meet up with Michelle Diltz. Michelle Diltz is one of the tenured Olympic strength coaches at the University of Alabama. And I went down there, with the intention of helping out with softball while continuing degree in human performance at the University of Alabama. And while I was there, I went down there in 2014 and started taking classes, as well as volunteering and helping out in the weight room with softball. And then that soon became another opportunity to write the programming for cheerleading. So I wrote the programming and coached cheerleading in the football weight room there in Tuscaloosa. And then a few months after that, because cheerleading was the training block right before football would start. Coach Terry Jones, who's a master CSCCA coach, kind of went to Michelle and said, who's that loud, obnoxious kid from New York down there on the platforms with cheerleading? And he pretty much said, I want him with tight ends and linebackers with me. So then I had an opportunity to volunteer and help out with football as well, which was an incredible experience, to say the least, being that that was the first season leading into the first ever college football playoff. And then from there, I told you previous, on our phone conversation that Rachel Balkovec and, the director of softball operations at Alabama, had a previous collegiate softball career together. And that kind of tied me in and brought me in with St. Louis. I became the high A strength coach for the St. Louis Cardinals for the 2015 season. Had an opportunity to work big league camp with Pete Prinze and Rachel Balkovec at the time. And as soon as big league camp was over, I went from eating protein pancakes and steak and eggs every day to minor league food, which is an incredibly humbling experience, to say the least. And then spent the time with advanced A ball. Oliver Marmol was my manager. He's now the first base coach for the big leagues and for the Cardinals organization. And I served under Rachel Balkovec, who I believe is now with the Houston Astros organization. At the end of the season, I had an opportunity present itself that doesn't come along every once in a while in a strength coach's career. I had the opportunity to go back to my home city of New York and develop and start up a brand new strength and conditioning facility for Manhattan College. Prior to my tenure there, they have never had a strength and conditioning program before. Each one of the coaches would pretty much hire a local personal trainer to come in and train the athletes in the student rec center or what have you. So I literally got to go in and build a culture that previously wasn't existent. I got to build a weight room and, you know, many different athletes of many different teams I've never had exposure to before. And again, I got to do it in a Division I culture in my home neighborhood of the Bronx, which was a pretty cool opportunity. For my 2-year tenure in New York City, I was then given an opportunity by Jennifer Norton, who at the time was the director of strength and conditioning for Olympic sports at Florida Atlantic. And she pretty much said, hey, you know, I'm familiar with your background of college baseball and softball. I'd really be interested in having you down and working with our programs. So she gave me an incredible opportunity to come down to FAU at a time where the program seemed to be pretty progressive. The recent hiring of Lane Kiffin and some of the Alabama staffers there. So it's been a great ride, and I've been serving in that role ever since as an assistant strength coach at FAU and primarily serving as the baseball strength coach.
That's an awesome journey, man, especially the part about being able to go back home. That is, like you said, something that not everybody gets to do. So that's really cool that you had a chance to go back home and start up something right in your neighborhood.
It was pretty special.
I bet. So let's kind of talk big picture college baseball programming, and then we'll kind of go into a comparison of pro ball versus college ball.
Absolutely.
So let's start there at college baseball programming. Anything that you got for the listeners? We're all ears.
The first thing is, you know, obviously, although it was a short tenure, my time in professional baseball, you know, that's going to resonate with the players regardless of what level you work with. So like when I worked with Manhattan College baseball, LIU Brooklyn baseball, and now FAU, the fact that I did have experience, the guys that are in the big leagues, either at the time or, you know, eventually transcended their career into the big leagues from when I had them in minor league baseball, you know, your level of credibility and respect, is not given. It's not a given, but it's definitely easy to ride off of in terms of big picture buy-in and culture developing and things of that sort. But my biggest thing is to understand, and something they talk about in baseball all the time is, you know, having feel. You know, showing that you understand the game of baseball, you understand the grind that it is. So my biggest thing is establishing a culture and getting these guys to understand the why behind our programming. If it's exercise selection in the weight room, if it's speed, if it's reactive agility work, if it's conditioning, you know, if it's the tail end of the season and my starter still has to do his aerobic capacity run the day after he throws and he's like, come on, Johnny, like we have 4 weeks left. Why am I still doing this? You know, just being able to show them that you have a why behind what it is that they're doing. So those are my two biggest things is establishing your culture and the why. And I guess my third thing is, at least when it comes to my time working with college baseball, I can't really speak for other sports that I work with, but baseball in particular, I really try and take the approach of treating them like young adults and young professionals, in a sense that I don't run the weight room sessions and the conditioning and the speed work as much in a militaristic or disciplinarian environment where I'm blowing a whistle and yelling and screaming and things of that sort. I'm more talking to them as an educator and as a mentor to them. More so than anything else. I just feel like today's day and age with, you know, the baseball culture and, you know, trying to get these guys to buy in and understand what they're trying to do. I think that's important, is establishing a connection with the players first. You know how mental this game can be for a lot of these guys. You really want to make sure that you develop a rapport with them and you establish their trust first before anything else. Anybody can blow a whistle and threaten guys with suicides and gassers and things like that. But it's another thing to be able to reach out to a kid that's not from your hometown, might not be your religion or the same ethnic background, but be able to touch. He's able to buy in and kind of appreciate what you're trying to get to him.
Yeah, baseball is kind of an intimate game like that, man. Like we had talked about before we got on camera here, we just had a 12-hour bus ride. And it's not like the coaches ride one bus and the players ride the other. We're all on the same bus together, and we all get to know each other, you know, maybe more than we want to at times.
Absolutely.
But, I'm right there with you on that one and kind of understanding who they are and giving them some autonomy in their playing careers. And like you said, if they know the why, they're gonna trust you. They're going to understand what's going on, and they'll work for you.
Absolutely.
But having that relationship is big. So let's kind of talk specifics here, a little bit of nitty-gritty stuff. Let's keep it in season so that our listeners can kind of have a view of how in-season baseball in college works compared to pro ball.
Okay.
So lifting schedule for a week, conditioning, starter routine, anything that you kind of want to talk about here is fair game for me. I just want to see maybe compare pro ball in season to college ball in season.
Okay. So basically what I did with the guys and what I've done in the past with LIU Brooklyn and Manhattan College baseball. If I take a typical in-season week, in-season microcycle, depends on, for me, I like to vary things depending on our schedule. If I know that we're playing a team that has a much, much, much lower RPI, we're going to be throwing one of our midweek guys. It's not a must-win game, so the stress level's down a little. I'm going to utilize that opportunity to kind of load the players up a little bit more. So, where if we have a midweek game against Central, and then I know that we're going to be playing Southern Miss in the Conference USA Championship this weekend, my focus is going to be much more movement, soft tissue based, and things like that. But a typical lifting week, I'm going to have one strength day. I'll have one velocity day. And then the third day, especially when we're on the road, I'll always reach out to one of the college strength coaches on the campus of which we're visiting to see if I can get some of my position players in there. It's more of an accessory day. You know how it is in pro ball. A lot of the times, we want to make sure that we provide a rhyme and a reason and some sort of a periodization scheme and a plan behind what we're doing in a weight room setting. But you know how it is with the mental approach to baseball. Sometimes these guys just want to get in and get that blood flow, clear their heads, feel good about themselves. So anytime we're on the road, I try to set up some sort of a half functional, half hypertrophy accessory day for the guys so they can get a workout in either at the hotel or the local college that we're playing out on the road. But typically my strength and my velocity days in season we'll be doing at the FAU weight room back on campus before we start to travel.
And what about conditioning? Are you still running guys in season? Are you doing any speed work in season? Is it just pitchers? Is it just position players? Or is it kind of, depending on the schedule, similar to lifting?
It really depends on the schedule. I will say that my starting rotation is probably the most meticulous of training and programming throughout the course of the season. I really like to keep them on a very, very consistent schedule with respect to their conditioning, whether it be more aerobic based or anaerobic based throughout the course of the week, obviously based on their throwing schedule. Position players, it's going to vary on, is he a middle infielder? Is he an outfielder? Is it an everyday guy? Is it a bench guy? Do we have a couple days off before our next series? So maybe I'll do some reactive, four cone drills or some light 10-yard starts off the right field line after they take BP and things of that sort. Relievers, I like to try to keep as close to the consistency as possible as the starters, but I don't like to run them as much. Obviously, we have a smaller bullpen than you would in pro ball, and a lot of times we're going with the same guy over and over again. So if he's hot during a midweek game, he might be hot on Friday and Saturday as well. So I really want to make sure the recovery is there for some of those players. We had a guy named Drew Peden. He's a senior. He just graduated with our program. Great guy, absolute workhorse, competitive on the mound, extremely, extremely athletic. There was times during the course of the end of the season where he was throwing 7 to 8 games in a row. you know, coming in there for us, and the amount of saves and things like that, that he's been tremendous for our program. So in a case like Drew Peden, you know, where he's playing almost every single day, you have to kind of understand from a stress recovery standpoint that maybe having him on as a consistent conditioning program as a starting rotation might not be as beneficial for his recovery. And then, you know, position players, you know, I might do some banded 10-yard starts that we used to do in the Cardinals organization, some bodyweight 10-yard starts, some half-kneeling starts, some waterfall starts, really just to keep their lower half engaged and firing and getting their heart rate up and, you know, getting them moving after they take BP. But nothing crazy towards the tail end of the season once we get to the conference tournament.
Yeah, it sounds similar to pro ball in the sense that playing comes first and the schedule kind of dictates everything else.
That you couldn't have said it better myself.
For sure. So let's kind of get into that. Compare and contrast a little bit of pro ball and college ball. Not necessarily the X's and O's, but kind of the outside stuff. Your responsibilities, maybe in terms of like food and maybe the facilities that you're seeing and maybe the travel that you're experiencing, things like that.
Well, when I was in the Florida State League, I definitely would say that I had a more of a spoiled experience than anybody else, because most of the ballparks that we traveled to were the spring training facilities. So I remember every time we'd go play, you know, in Bradenton, I'd either have access to IMG Academy or I'd have access to Pirate City or the big league weight room that the Pirates utilize, which are, you know, pretty nice facilities. So when I was in the Florida State League, I think I was a very, very, I think my experience was a little bit of an outlier to most minor league strength coaches. I think you could agree on that. College baseball, same thing. There's times where we'll travel, we'll go play Rice, or we'll go play Marshall, or we'll go play, you know, FIU or whatever the case might be. And, you know, more often than not, the college strength coaches on staff are more than welcoming of having our guys come in on a Friday morning or a Friday afternoon of a 3-game series and letting us kind of come in and, you know, throw some weight around for 20 to 30 minutes. So in that regard, it's very, very similar. My starting rotation, very, very similar to pro ball. You know, the post outing flush, you know, the lift post outing day, and the lift again right after their bullpen, right after they throw their side middle of the week. And you want to keep their conditioning pretty consistent throughout the course of the season. So there's a comparison in that perspective. When it comes to the food selection, you know, the clubby that we had in A ball was pretty much in charge of that. In the Florida State League, it was a lot of watermelon. Lots and lots of watermelon and a lot of crock pot meals and public sandwiches. Coach McCormick and the baseball staff here at FAU have been great. We've been able to collaborate a lot. Myself and the director of baseball operations here, Brian Thomas. Every time we're on the road, hey, John, we're in a 6-hour lightning delay. You know, we're going to go to the grocery store and get these guys some things. You know, what should I be? Should I be getting Pedialyte, Gatorade? You know, should I be getting Clif bars? Should I be getting sandwiches? Like, should we get deli meat? Should we get peanut butter? What type of peanut butter? So he's been really, really good about making sure that we're consistent about, you know, when we're on the road or even when we're at home, what kind of approach we're going to utilize with respect to our food selection. So it's been great. I think our clubby at the time with St. Louis, he was up for that. But I think the amount of responsibilities and things that lied on his shoulders, you know, it's the last thing that ever came up in conversation. So there is a definite difference in terms of how much of an impact I'm able to make from a nutritional standpoint with, and a food standpoint, and a supplemental standpoint with the college guys in comparison to what I was in pro ball.
The joke here is that the Eastern League is like the league of meatball sandwiches.
Yeah. So,
I know what you're talking about with a lot of watermelon and like turkey sandwiches and peanut butter and jellies and the meatball subs and all of that. So, so the director of baseball ops kind of takes care of that. And then you kind of just put your 2 cents in when needed.
Yeah. So he'll, you know, there obviously there'll be days where, you know, based on the football lifting schedule, we'll have to come up with a last minute practice time and then a last minute team lift time. So in instances like that, there's, hey John, like, sorry, but we got to get Chick-fil-A for these guys because we need something quick. We need something cheap. We need it fast. But other times where, you know, we kind of know our schedule ahead of time, we'll go to some of these restaurants and to be like, all right, I'm going to get Brussels sprouts. I'm going to get sweet potato based noodles. I'm going to get some grilled chicken. I'm going to get some steak and things like that. So he's done a great job for a mid-major program that doesn't have a whole lot of resources. you know, our head coach, our staff, and our director of ops have done a great job at buying into the whole, making sure that these guys are fed and hydrated properly type of thing.
That's great to hear then. That's a big part of it.
Being from New York, I wouldn't mind meatball sandwiches on a daily basis. But
I'm right there with you, man.
Yeah.
So what do you believe in within strength and conditioning that others think you are crazy for believing?
All right. So I have a story for you.
All right. Perfect.
So when I was in A-ball, I forget the gentleman's name. If he's watching or listening to this, I apologize if I forget your name. But at the time, he was the strength coach for the Tampa Yankees. And I see his starter in our weight room, and he's kind of doing this. It was a post-activation potentiation routine with him right before he starts throwing. So I'm sure you're familiar in pro ball. You know, the guy who's throwing for the day, he'll go out, might run some half pulls just to get his legs fired up a little bit. You know, he'll do some long toss, some flat ground, and then eventually before the national anthem, he'll start throwing off the bump. So we were kind of talking about the concept, and I was very, very intrigued by it. And I wanted to try with our guys. But at the time, our pitching coach, Randy Neiman, he pitched for the 86 Mets. He was a reliever for the 86 Mets. He was in the big leagues with the Red Sox organization. He'd been with the Mets staff for a while. Not sure he was into the whole, I'm going to lift my starter before he goes out and throws 90 to 100 pitches idea. But he said, you know, do what you want before the guys throw their bullpen. See if the guys buy into it. And if they like it, we'll see what happens from there. So Luke Weaver, who was our first round draft pick out of Florida State at the time, I kind of talked to him about the concept, and I modified it a little bit different than what the Yankees guy was doing, but similar premise. In that I did a hex bar deadlift, about 87 to 90% of the one rep max, repeated by five PVC pipe squat jumps, repeated squat jumps, and then five Dynamax medicine ball throws as hard as they can to me. Just letting it go, just letting it eat. And right from then, they would go out and start throwing. And so I introduced the concept to him. He kind of looked at me cross-eyed, like, no chance, not doing it. But needless to say, I think he was having a bad day one day, and he was like, all right, let's do this. Let's just try and see what happens. Well, after one time he threw aside, he was like, you know, it's kind of strange. Like, I felt really connected. I felt like I was getting a good push off my lower half. You know, it could just be the fact that I had Starbucks before I got here, whatever the case might be, but you know, it felt good, you know? So he tried it a couple more times. Then before you know it, he was doing it for every side after about 5 or 6 weeks. And Randy Neiman, the pitching coach, came up to me one day when we were in Jupiter, and he was like, Luke is really buying into this. Like, he really likes it. His bullpens have looked fantastic. We don't know if it's the PAP warm-up you're doing, or if it just so happens that this kid's maturing and he's doing well this season, but whatever we're doing, it's working. So we go to, we take a weekend series. We're going to play the Clearwater Thrashers, the high A team for the Phillies. And it's our first night there. And Randy Neiman comes up to me and he goes, I want you doing the warm-up with Luke tonight. And I looked at him. I said, Luke is pitching tonight. So Luke's in his uniform. We're about maybe 45 minutes out from the national anthem. And I'm walking over to the Phillies weight room, and I knock on the strength coach's office's door. I said, hey man, do you mind if I get the weight room for a couple seconds? And he's like, yeah, sure. And he sees Luke come in behind me. He looks at him and he's like, isn't that your starter? And I was like, it is. It is. But we're just going to use it for a couple minutes, then we'll be gone. And he's like, all right, man, anything you need. So I take Luke in there, and we go through the routine. He does five hex bar deadlifts. They didn't have a PVC pipe, so I utilized a dowel. He did the five reactive jumps, and then he did the Dynamax med ball as hard as he could to me. More of a scoop throw as opposed to a shot put. And he went out and started throwing. And I don't know if it was karma, good luck, if the powers that be up in the clouds, up in the heavens, were on my side to make sure I didn't get blacklisted from baseball. Luke went out and was throwing a perfect game through 8.5 innings. And he hit his highest velocity. I believe it was in the bottom of the ninth inning, but he hit his 100 pitch count. So they did not let him finish the game. But needless to say, at the end of the game, everybody was pretty ecstatic at his performance, obviously. I don't think that there was any correlation between his outing and the warm-up. I think it was just luck was really, really on my side that night. But I think at the end of the day, from a scientific perspective, Obviously, that potentiation effect is really only going to last anywhere from, you know, 30 minutes to an hour, if that. But I think where that comes into play in baseball, especially with a starter, and the mental approach of being a pitcher, is if they can go through their pregame, if they can go through their pregame warmup, and they can their outing and feel connected and they feel good mentally and psychologically, that can have a huge carryover throughout the rest of the game. If they connected and they feel like they have to worry about is hitting their spots and competing, as opposed to, I'm not finishing, I'm not getting out in front, I feel like my legs are heavy, or whatever the case might be. So, whether guys will want to believe in that type of a routine or not before a pitcher's outing, I'm not quite sure. We tried it, we experimented with it. And then I actually brought that to LIU Brooklyn Baseball when I was with them, and all the starters did that before their routines as well. So we liked it, we enjoyed it. We haven't gotten to the point yet where we've done it with FAU yet. But I kind of wanted to, you know, get a feel for the program first. It was a new pitching coach. I was new. The athletic trainer was new. So we kind of wanted to go through the season first before we had anything flashy. But moving forward, it's definitely something I'd like to be interested in incorporating again.
That is interesting. I have had some guys say that they feel the best when they get a quick lift in. And then go out and throw, and they've asked, you know, hey, can we do this before we pitch all the time? It's like, we'll see. Like, yeah, you know what I mean? It's not just a, okay, you did it today and you happen to have a good day. Like you need more of a consistent routine. So,
absolutely.
I bet the look on the coordinator's face was pretty interesting. It's probably ingrained in your mind from, when you went into Philly's weight room.
Yeah, he was kind of looking at me like, you know, what are you doing type of thing. But, you know, we tried, you know, we experimented with it. We didn't know how it was going to turn out or what was going to come of it. But, you know, the little bit that we did utilize with it, I don't know if Luke Weaver still does it to this day in St. Louis. He's up in the big leagues now. But at least when we were in A-ball, we utilized it. And, you know, he was pretty confident that it played a big part in, you know, his pre-pitch preparation and things like that. So I was... Even if it was short-lived, I'm glad I got to have that experience with him. And, you know, it was definitely enjoyable because, as you know, being in a professional sports organization, you know, there's a lot of, I don't want to say restrictions, but there's a lot of boundaries and red tape that you kind of can't cross. And you have to stay within certain guidelines because these guys are investments of the organization. And you do have to be mindful of, you know, the practices that you utilize, and you have to take their health and safety into consideration. But it was a cool opportunity where it was an opportunity for me to think outside the box and actually be able to implement it with our players. So it was cool.
Yeah, no doubt. So let's transition a little bit. What advice do you have for others in the field, maybe in general and then maybe specifically to either pro ball or college ball or both? I mean, you've seen both sides. So
I definitely think for any strength coach out there that has an opportunity to work with baseball, whether it be in the professional ranks or in college baseball, for that matter, if it's JUCO, if it's D2, if it's D1, baseball is a very meticulous, special sport. You know, the intricacies of, you know, the shoulder complex, the fact that baseball is a refined motor skill. It's not about brute strength or just top end speed or just power output or just vertical jump like some other sports. Make sure that you're fitting the exercise to cater the needs of the player and the athlete. Don't try and fit the athlete to an exercise program. Make sure you have a sincere why and understanding as to why you're selecting something. You know, for example, if I have a pitcher that lives in an extension pattern, he's very, very lat dominant. You know, do I think that the back squat is one of the king of all exercises? And do I love back squatting myself? Without question. I think it's a staple of my training and a lot of the programs that I put together for college athletes. But if I have a starting pitcher in college and I know he has potential to get drafted, my job is to make sure that I train him not only to perform, but to keep him as healthy as possible to help preserve his or her possible career. And I'm talking about football players there. So maybe the back squat isn't the best exercise from a loaded standpoint to use in season. So, you know, that's why I appreciate being at FAU. I have a pitch chart. I have safety bars. I have other options that I can utilize to load the lower half. So that way I can do my best at not only loading him to keep him strong and healthy throughout the course of the season, but think about his health and his longevity in this game. You know, so always make sure that you're trying to fit the exercise to the athlete, not the athlete to your personal exercise program.
That's really good, man. And it makes a lot of sense in this game. And like you said, if people haven't experienced baseball strength and conditioning, they really need to, because it's just a whole different world compared to just about any other sport, I would say.
And this, you know, this particular experience I had at FAU, if you ask a lot of my athletes that I've had in the past, whether it be with the Cardinals at Alabama, Manhattan College, LIU Brooklyn, I'm very, very Olympic based. I believe in Olympic weightlifting as a skill, as a sport, the psychological approach that you get from it when training it in the off season. I love power cleans. I love the snatch. I love the clean and jerk. But this is the first time, and I think this is the maturation of my own career, where I said, what's the benefit to risk ratio of spending an entire fall semester trying to teach a team that's never exposed to the weightlifting variations before? Or should I just transition out of my own box and instead of sticking them onto a power clean or a jerk or a push press that they haven't done before, their bodies might not be ready for it. Just utilize, you know, upper body and lower body plyometric exercises. And you know, stick to the foundations and the roots of what it is that we do, and, you know, try not to get fancy with it. You can still get a benefit out of it. So understand what the benefit ratio is when incorporating exercises with certain athletes. And me, you know, understanding that a lot of my players are playing for the collegiate U.S. national team. We ended up having 6 or 7 guys get drafted at the end of the season this year. So that's a lot to take into consideration, and how you program and how you train these athletes could have a huge impact on what they're going to be doing well after you provide them their collegiate strength and conditioning program. So, you know, that was something that was an eye-opening experience to me. Is I've always been married to the Olympic lifts, and this was the first time where I kind of had to take a step back and think about the bigger picture, you know?
That's a good way to put it, man. The maturation of your own self and your own career, of separating from what you love to do and what you know they need to do.
Right. Absolutely.
I'm right there with you. I talk to my buddies all the time. Like, listen, I know what you love to do, but it's different in baseball. So.
Absolutely.
So where are you going for continuing ed? Do you have any books that you've been reading lately, or any podcasts you listen to, any seminars that you attend? Where do you go for continuing ed?
I most recently went to Weber International there near Lakeland. I believe it's near Lakeland, Florida. I went there for a daily seminar a couple months ago with the men's basketball strength coach at Florida Atlantic. And they did a great job at covering so many different aspects of strength and conditioning, from the psychological approach to, you know, culture building in a weight room setting, nutritional and recovery protocols, utilizing Olympic lifting, different movement prep modalities from, you know, rails and cars and things like that. And then everything from that to West Side Barbell and utilizing the conjugate method in a powerlifting based program. So shout out to the Weber International staff. They did a great job at putting on that seminar for that day. And it really addressed several different topics and avenues in strength conditioning. And also Ron McKeefery's Iron Game Chalk Talk. I mean, I've been listening to that since I was an intern when he very first started doing those podcasts. I just always appreciated the different minds that he had on and the impact that those people have made in history, information that they have to share and things of that sort. But another thing outside of, I guess, more of a formalized educational piece, whether it be a webinar or a book to read, was my personal experience working with weightlifting in the college strength and conditioning setting. And I think my approach to weightlifting is a little bit different than most. I had coaches in New York train me and coach me in weightlifting. Everything from not touching the barbell with your foot to slamming the weight to, you know, you have to graduate from a dowel to a 15 kg bar to a 20 kg bar, and don't touch the barbell with your feet, or you never step over the barbell, and, you know, one lifter lifts at a time type thing. So my question would be that if you're a strength coach that likes utilizing the Olympic lifts, I love them. I think it's a great, you're getting strength, you're getting power, you're getting loaded triple extension. And a lot of athletes just genuinely like doing that because they always present that challenge. They're never done 100% right, so there's always work to be done. So I'm a big advocate for them. But if you're going to utilize them, you know, please understand that weightlifting is a sport within itself. It's a skill and it's a motivation developed within itself. Reach out to those who have the experience and the credibility and the knowledge to teach you how to teach your athletes. Putting your athletes in the best position to learn, to be safe, and to utilize them effectively. I think coaching weightlifting goes far beyond yelling, big shrug, big pull. I think there's a lot more to it than what meets the eyes. You know, I've been to seminars with Dmitry Kolokov, Mark Chasnov, who's a USAW Level 5 Senior International Coach at the New York Weightlifting Academy. Just do your best as a coach to kind of, you know, make sure that if you're going to utilize those variations, do so with the athlete's best interest in mind and really try to improve your coaching skill with that.
That's awesome that you got to go with Klokov and you got all that experience, man. That is, like, people say they love the Olympic lifts, but it sounds like you are fully in on the Olympic lifts.
Yes, yes. Training with Dmitry Klokov was definitely a humbling experience.
So it looks like it's a beautiful day behind you, and I know you probably want to go and spend some time in New York City, your home, a couple days off. But if you have time, I'd like to do a lightning round. What do you think?
Sure.
Cool. All right, so first question, who is your biggest influence in the field of strength and conditioning?
Scott Cochran.
Scott Cochran. Okay, short, sweet. Yeah. I can understand completely why that is.
It's not so much the X's and O's of strength and conditioning is why he was probably his impact on my career. It's more so his ability to communicate and how he ran his staff, which was most influential to me. And what I mean by that is you take anywhere from 75 to 80 young student athletes that might not have the highest regard for authority. Some of them are not coming from the greatest of backgrounds and family upbringings. And his personality, he's able to draw those 75 to 80 kids together and get them to run headfirst into a brick wall for him. You know, so the way he commands himself and the respect that he gets from his players, it's one thing to watch clips on YouTube or on Barstool and things like that, but to be in the weight room and to be in his office every single day for a year and change and see the ins and outs of how he runs his staff was an incredible feat as a young strength coach. And I think one of the best things about Coach Cochran is that he knew what his strengths are, he knew what his weaknesses were, and he utilized so many different avenues to make his staff better. Where when it came to running mechanics and things like that, he might use Jason Poeth. Or he might utilize another strength coach where his background was Olympic weightlifting with Gail Hatch down in Louisiana. So that guy's going to be in charge of teaching my freshmen and teaching my interns how to coach the clean pull or the snatch pull. I'm going to take this guy because he's great with doing rehab exercises and corrective exercise. So I'm going to put him with my rehab players, my quarterbacks, and my kickers. So he did a great job. Instead of trying to micromanage what everybody does, he did a great job at tapping into the skills that each coach provided and helped make his staff better that way. And I think that was one of the best things that I learned from him.
That's awesome. And it's not something you can see in a YouTube video.
Right, exactly.
So second one piece of equipment to train with. I can almost guarantee I know this answer.
Alico bar.
Yeah, that's that's exactly where my head was.
Yes.
Number three, biggest accomplishment professionally and or personally.
I'd say the biggest accomplishment that I've had professionally, personally, was this past year with FAU baseball. Being in a position where, you know, it was the first time this year we swept the University of Miami in our program history. It's the first time in our program history we made it to the Conference USA Championship. We beat the number one seed Florida Gators in the NCAA regional for the elimination game. So I think being a part of that family, that FAU baseball family with Coach Mack and the culture that he's instilled there was the biggest, I would consider the biggest success of my career thus far.
Right on. That's awesome. And when we talked off camera, it just sounds like you guys were so, so close to advancing as well. So,
absolutely. So I'd have to go with that answer.
Any career other than strength and conditioning, what would you choose?
Any career other than strength and conditioning. If and when the time allots, I could definitely see myself owning, operating, and possibly even cooking in an Italian restaurant in New York City one day. For any of my followers on Instagram or any of my athletes that knows me, I'm very, very big at just, you know, how strength and conditioning can be when you're always on the road and things like that. My way of kind of feeling that home feel and reminding me of my family and being back home in New York is you know, making dishes, chicken franchise, chicken marsala, chicken parm, spaghetti carbonara, making a nice meat sauce on Sundays. So definitely a culinary experience for sure if I was never a strength coach.
I grew up in an Italian house, and my dad is a chef, and he literally will make anything taste good. And Sunday sauce was like the big thing in our house. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know exactly what I'm talking about then, yep.
All right, I got one more for you. Speaking of food, this kind of just came to my head. Best place to eat in New York City if I go to visit ever?
Emilio's Bellotto on 55 East Houston Street. My buddy Anthony Vitolo, him and I studied exercise science together at Hofstra University. He is now the part owner and head chef there at Emilio's Bellotto. You can follow him on Instagram. I think it's Chef Anthony Vitolo or something like that. But if you search the restaurant, you'll find him. He was bachelor's in exercise science with me. We went through the kinesis classes, the anatomy and phys labs, the human nutrition classes together. And now he's making, you know, linguine and pasta and and steaks and seafood for everybody from Barack Obama to Jimmy Fallon and Leonardo DiCaprio. So he's doing a great job, and the restaurant's food speaks for itself. So anytime you get a chance to go to New York City, first stop. Don't even check your bags in the hotel. Go there first.
There was no hesitation to that answer. That's how I know the place is good.
I'm telling you, if you ever get the opportunity, you'll thank me later.
It's been fun, man. I've had a blast, and I think this is a really good one for our listeners. Just something different out of the box of just pro ball. If we want to get in touch with you, if you want to hear more from you, where do we go? Are you on social media? I know you mentioned Instagram, so where are we going?
Yeah, my name, Johnny Larson on Facebook. I have Twitter and Snapchat and things like that, but primarily I utilize my Instagram. So it's at Johnny_Larson89, and you spell Larson, LARSON. So anything from, I share anything from what I do with my baseball players in season to what type of lasagna I'm making on Sundays.
Wide variety of all the important things.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, man, I appreciate you coming on. It's been fun. Go enjoy your day in New York City, and we'll talk to you soon.
Chris, thank you so much. I appreciate it, and enjoy the rest of the grind. I know you got a long ways to go for the rest of the season, but enjoy it and keep in touch.
Thanks, man. Will do.
All right, everybody. That concludes this episode with Johnny. I hope you enjoyed this one. It was pretty cool to have somebody come on and talk about their past experience in professional baseball and be able to compare it to their current experience in college baseball. Three things that I took from Johnny: make sure that the athletes understand the why, establish a connection first, and always keep their best interest at heart. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.